The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Dr. Rab, what you got?
I cannot top that. Let me try.
I love that. This week, I will not make you meow like cats, although I think that was one of the funniest things I ever heard here on Dark Side of the Pooch. I love that. It's Monday. It's Monday. That means it's Dark Side of the Pooch Monday. Thanks to thousands of folks who listen to the show every single week. Keep your mutt mail coming here. Go to TonyCurryRadio.net, TonyCurryRadio.net. Email us your questions, and we'll get to them here on the show every Monday at noon and 8. And, of course, if you want to go back and listen to all the shows, and there's like a million of them now, you can do that through Spotify or wherever you find your favorite podcast. Just search Tony Curry Radio, that's Curry with a K, or Dark Side of the Pooch, and you can find us. I wanted to howl to open the show because I'm sitting down here with my director of personnel and programming, James Michael Keats. And my ex is out of town, so she asked me to watch her dog, her blue heeler, for a few days. And I said, of course, because I'm amicable and I'm trying to be friendly. And so I brought the dog over and I put it on the back deck. And while I was down here doing our previous show, trying to record, all I could hear upstairs is, oh, howling from Frisco dog, my Havanese. What gives? Why do dog? I've never heard my dog howl before. What gives? What's going on?
He just misses you.
Is that it?
Yeah, or maybe the heel. Maybe he's got problems with the heeler.
This is the same heeler that actually almost took his leg off about a couple of years ago, and you know what happened there. I brought him right to your place, and you patched him up and took care of him. It's interesting.
Maybe it's the heeler
because I've heard dogs howl at sirens and tornado sirens. We had that happening here last night, and they all howled. But I've never had one howl when it's upstairs alone, and I'm downstairs. I knew it was I was down here.
Yeah, I think he misses you, or he doesn't want to be left alone with Cujo.
It could be a little bit of both. He's Dr. Rab Stewart, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital, at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter. Also, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. And, of course, you can see them at Rossbridge, the Animal Hospital. Their phone number is 205-208-0301, 208-0301. All right, so everyone's talking about the Will Smith, Chris Rock slap. And so I thought it'd be a good time to get into disciplining our pets. I can remember growing up, if the dog pooped on the carpet, it got its nose rubbed in it. My dad was a newspaper guy, so he'd smack the dog on the rear end whenever it did something wrong. I know other people do other things that are horrible to their pets, and we're certainly not talking about harming an animal, but much like you time out a child, can you time out a dog? And what's the best way Dr. Rab disciplines his dogs?
You have to discipline your dogs, because if you don't, they will become a threat or even a danger to you or one of your guests or family members or somebody that you're just walking down the street next to. So kind of like disciplining your kids, you can go too far. And of course, that's not what we're trying to do here. But also, like disciplining your kids, you have to figure out your own method. The only, you know, two methods that are not acceptable is doing nothing, and when you discipline them and it goes into abuse. Yeah. So it's a lot like kids. I choose to discipline my dog with loud noises. If he's doing something that is not okay, if he's about to pee or poop in the house, or if he's barking at somebody that is coming to our house to do something, like, you know, treat the lawn or, you know, whatever we have going on, Amazon guy at the door, I clap and make a loud noise, and that usually works. When you have a puppy, if you have a puppy that's trying to be real mouthy, because those behaviors can turn into really big problems as they get older. Puppies need to know that you are dominant to them. So if you're having trouble with them biting or being too aggressive, when they're really small and young, you can flip them on their back and just hold them there because they know that at that point you are dominant, you are making them submit, and you have made them vulnerable.
Does that work with, does that work with older dogs or no, just puppies?
Well, older dogs, it can become a, it can become dangerous to the person who's trying to subdue them.
Gotcha.
But that's why you want to do something like that, you know, early on. That's something that's not going to work when they get to be, you know, big dogs or adult dogs. But when they're little and they're still trying to figure out how their body works, you can get away with that. Puppies that are trying to bite, if you can kind of hold their mouth shut and then just, you know, gently push the sides of their cheeks against their teeth, you know, just enough to let them know that that is an uncomfortable position that you're putting them in. That can teach them not to bite. I mean, it's not, it's going to take several times of doing that before they get it. But you know, you don't, you obviously, you can't take it too far.
Yeah.
You know, but there's tons of trainers that will, we've talked about prong collars before. So if you're trying to discipline them just to heel or walk close to you or, you know, not do things in the house, you can use prong collars, you can use electrical collars. So, you know, I mean, you just can't take it too far.
What if that disciplinary measure does not work much like a child? I mean, we talk about Walmart and your child, if your kid's constantly spanked, it doesn't mean anything anymore. And I was talking to my program director before the show, and I said, it's just like kids in that it's not really the pain associated with that discipline. It's the thought that, hey, I've done something wrong, and you hope that changes their behavior. But I had a dog, and come to find out that this dog had, it was a scruffy dog. It was a wire fox terrier, one of the smartest dogs I ever had. And I found out this dog was having seizures. I wasn't aware of that at the time, but he would growl when we brought our first baby home from Guatemala. He would growl at that child, and I was like, that ain't happening. We're not, and there was no food involved. There was nothing. He would just growl at that child, and I was like, this dog's not going to bite my child. And so I would try to discipline him by roughhousing him a little bit, grabbing him by the collar, putting him outside, and disciplining it, and it just got worse. What's happening there?
That form just didn't work. Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, as much as we hate to admit it, you know, if we discipline them in a way that doesn't work, it can condition them to be even worse. So, like for example, with cats, if you discipline them in a way that, will become like a chronic source of, you know, emotional distress or something, that can make the behavior worse. So if, you know, if it's peeing or pooping in the house and then you try to do something like spray it with a water bottle or scare it or something, it might make it worse, and it might make it where it's really difficult to get them to stop doing what you're trying to get them to stop doing.
Okay. I would think disciplining a cat would be incredibly difficult because they don't really take direction well. You can't hold their mouth shut. How do you do that?
All cats are semi-domesticated. Yes, that's my belief.
Yes.
They are semi-domesticated. I mean, there's most of the time cats' misbehavior is like anxiety or fear-based. So you can try to address that problem, you know, by using pheromone treatment in the house. That can sometimes help with anxiety and help them have a sense of calm. So some of those behaviors can go away, but, you know, training cats is very difficult. I mean, I'm sure it can be done. I have never successfully done it. But there's two general term or two general ways of, trying to train pets. And, you know, it's positive or negative reinforcement. So, you know, we talked a second ago about negative reinforcement. There are some trainers that are strictly positive reinforcement, which, I mean, positive reinforcement I think is very important and does have its place. But you cannot, in my opinion, properly and thoroughly train a dog with only using positive reinforcement. So, you know, I think it's important that once you get the pet to do whatever you're trying to make it do, there needs to be a reward for doing the right thing, whatever that is. And, you know, it's hard enough to figure out what incentivizes people. Sometimes it can be even harder to figure out what incentivizes pets. But you know, usually it's going to be food or attention.
Yeah, I would think having a cat would be one of those things where you just have to take it. I mean, with dogs they can actually learn a little bit. But I was trying to think if I had furniture and I didn't, and obviously cats sharpen their claws on the side of furniture, which is horrible. That's why you get scratch pads and everything else, or your cat towers. But I mean, if you want to keep a cat off the furniture or keep it off the back of your couch, good luck. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, cats more so than dogs get rehomed for behavior issues because it's hard to teach them what to do, you know, so it's a fact. And, you know, inappropriate house soiling is the number one reason that, you know, cats get rehomed or, you know, taken to the shelter. And, you know, because it's hard to break that.
And I think you bring up a great point because we've mentioned this on this show. This is Dark Side of the Pooch with Dr. Reb Stewart here, of course, from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook, 208-0301. You got to discipline them like a child. If you can handle a dog, we always say that if you're going to have a baby, maybe start with a puppy first to see, first of all, just from a patient standpoint, if you can handle it, if you can get up in the middle of the night and let it out and do things that you'd normally do for a child. And again, from a disciplinary measure, If you find yourself wanting to raise a hand sooner than you probably should, then maybe you're not ready to have either at that point because it will test your patience. And the thing that bothers me most about my dog is I know as my dog, if my dog's not doing what I want it to do, it's my fault. It's not the dog's fault. It never is.
Well, I think that may not be 100% true. So I think this is really important for puppy owners. So looking at ages where socialization needs to start happening. And I think this is something that we don't spend enough time talking about in our profession. I don't think we properly arm the owners with the information that they need. And because also some of the socialization happens before they even have the pet. So, I mean, just as early as 5 days after the pet is born, it needs to be handled. And it needs to be handled by gentle adults and not small kids. You want to have a really warm, loving, nurturing environment in their first few days. Pets that are handled more just within that first week are so much more open to being around people than pets that are not handled. And that's something that the owners, you know, the eventual owners, they have no control over.
Yeah.
I mean, you can talk to the breeder about it and be sure that they do those things, but you know, it's hard to know if they do those things. And then when you do get the puppy, most people will get the puppy when they're, you know, 9 weeks old for the most part. But that socialization window starts as early as 6 weeks and it lasts until they're about 12 weeks. That's a really short period of time, especially if you are only getting the pet at 9 weeks of age. You've only got 3 weeks to expose it to as many people and as many healthy pets as you can. If the other thing is if a pet is weaned too soon, and most pets should not be weaned prior to 6 weeks of age, if they're weaned too soon, then they can have socialization issues from, you know, being pulled away from its mom and its family. So, you know, a lot of this stuff falls on the breeder.
Yeah.
Don't wean the pet too soon. Handle it, you know, often and frequently, and handle it properly, and socialize it, because you got those 3 weeks where most people don't have the pet yet and they have no control over what's going on. And then a very short window once they do get the pet.
Dr. Reb Stewart from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. This is Dark Side of the Pooch. You can hear it live every Monday at noon and 8 right here. And of course, wherever you listen to podcasts, we have ours on Spotify. Search Tony Curry Radio or Dark Side of the Pooch. I'm having this because I only got the blue heeler, Lizzie, my ex-wife's dog, for about 4 days. It runs rampant through the house, and obviously I have two other dogs and it just brings a different dynamic. I know there's going to be poop and pee in the hallway. I've already said fine with that. But what I do find out is as a pet lover that I am too, soon in putting that dog out. It's really easy to put a bark collar on this dog and just chain it up in the backyard, knowing that it's mostly an inside animal, although it's just brute force and it's got a lot of muscle. It's a loving pet. It's a loving dog. Do a lot of pet owners have that issue? Because I think a lot of people just put the dog outside. If you got a screened-in porch or fence outside, put the dog outside. And by doing that for long periods of time, you make that dog more of an outdoor dog. And then when it comes in the house, it doesn't act the way you want it to.
I mean, maybe there's something to that, but you want to let them. My first instinct is if the dog needs to go out, to let it out and let it stay out as long as it wants to. Because if you sometimes they're giving you signals that they want to go outside.
Yeah.
And they're going to behave better if they do spend time outside. But I think it's when we make them do something, against their will. And sometimes that just has to happen because we're talking about discipline, but when they don't want to go outside and you keep them outside for a long period of time, then that can cause anxiety and stress on the pet. And if you don't put them outside when they want to go outside, that can cause stress and anxiety. So for me, if my dog wants to go out and it's safe for him to go out, it's not too hot, it's not too cold. There's no danger out there for him. Then I let him go out and stay out as long as he wants to. And he comes back to the door and scratches on it or whines, and then I let him in.
Yeah.
So, it kind of have to just take it on a dog by dog basis.
There you go. We got some mutt mail here for us. A very great conversation there about disciplining or trying to discipline your cat and disciplining your dogs. Jenny in Birmingham said last year it was Easter time. Easter's just a couple of weeks away. Her dog got into a basket of chocolates. She didn't do anything about it. It was fine. She's heard that obviously it's not good for chocolates to go into the digestive system of a dog. She said, why exactly is that? And is there a safe level that an animal could accidentally eat and it be okay?
Chocolate will cause problems. It can cause heart problems and it can cause neurological problems. The bigger the dog, and first of all, let me say, it's just don't feed your dog chocolate. There's never a safe amount to feed a dog.
Okay.
Now there's levels of toxicity, so a big dog can eat more than a small dog. And there are certain chocolates that are more likely to cause problems than others. So milk chocolate is not as bad as dark chocolate. And then the baking chocolate is the worst of all.
And why is that?
It just has to do with the amount of toxin that is in the chocolate.
Gotcha.
So, the baking chocolate has more of the toxin in it. And don't quote me on this. I'm going to go out on a limb. I think it's methylxanthine.
Yeah.
Is the actual toxin in the chocolate that causes the problem. So there's a way to calculate it. So when someone calls and says, hey, my dog got into chocolate, the first thing we tell them to do is just come in no matter what. Let's just take a look and be sure that there's no signs of neurological problems or heart problems. But there's a way to calculate a dose that would be considered very problematic and a dose that would be mild and we probably don't need to worry. Most of the time, the owners have a really hard time quantifying how much the dog got into.
Yeah.
So that's why it's hard for us to say, oh, your pet will be fine. Just watch out for these things and you'll be fine. It's best to come in. A lot of times we'll induce vomiting. We've made dogs throw up tons. I mean, it's like a pond of chocolate before,
Wow. How do you make a dog vomit?
We give them something called apomorphine, and it's an injection you give them in their vein, and they throw up within seconds. Usually. Wow. You can give them hydrogen peroxide orally. That's kind of hit or miss. And also it can cause gastric ulcers, cause ulcerations if you give a lot of it. There's some stuff, the eye drops. So you can use apomorphine, like ocular drops, or dissolve a tablet.
That's an old bar trick. You know that, don't you? Bartenders, if you were pissing off a bartender, man, you put a couple eye drops in their bourbon and Coke and they're puking their brains out about 5 minutes later.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe it's happened to me.
I don't know. But and most recently a dog got into some peppermint chocolate and it was incredible the amount of chocolate that dog threw up. But what was even more incredible was when the dog threw this up, it smelled delicious.
I was going to say it probably had great fresh breath, didn't it?
It was like the dog never ate it. It was still in the wrapper. It was unbelievable.
That's great. Skip in Jacksonville, Florida says, why in the world does my cat suck on blankets?
It was weaned too early.
Really?
It's like So it's trying to comfort itself. So it was probably, you know, either a kitten that was abandoned or, you know, a kitten that was, you know, weaned too soon. If it's, you know, if it's a purebred cat, but you know, most of these cats are just kind of born cats, or they're just born, you know, and found, and that's how they kind of make themselves feel comfortable.
Well, James Michael Keats was standing here, and he just had an epiphany. He was like, oh, now I know. We asked some cat questions for him, too. Steve in Newport, Kentucky. There's a new city on board here. He wants to know, what in the world is a dew claw? I've never heard of this. What's a dew claw?
The dew claw is the thumbnail, what will be considered our thumbnail. And most dogs will not have a dew claw on their back feet, but some do, but most will not. Most dogs will have a dew claw, and cats too, a dew claw on their front feet, but sometimes breeders will have those removed shortly after birth, within about 3 to 5 days. Dew claws are kind of useless. They don't come in contact with the ground. They're not opposable, you know, like our thumbs. So they're really kind of useless digits, and it makes more work when you're trimming nails. And sometimes those nails get overlooked and they grow really long, and they either grow into the pads, which can cause infections and discomfort, or sometimes they'll get caught on blankets and be abulsed or pulled off or broken.
So is it an extra toe or just a claw?
It's a digit and a claw.
I got you. So how relevant is that? How often does that happen? Like on a newborn?
Well, it depends. I mean, a lot of purebred dogs will have that done, yeah, you know, when they're 3 to 5 days old, but not all. I mean, we see tons of dogs that have dew claws on their front feet, and it's in Great Pyrenees. You don't want to amputate those ever because it's part of the breed and they have double dew claws. They have two of them there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not something that you have to do in a dog ever. You know, you can leave them on there. It's no problem. You know, I kind of equate that to, circumcision, you know, in people.
Yeah.
You know, it's something you do shortly after birth, and it can, you know, help with problems that they may have down the road, but the problems are pretty mild.
My father-in-law was circumcised when he was 70.
Wow.
I don't know why, but I'm like, it's one of those things where it's like half the people say to do it, half the other half. But, you know, if I'm put out and I'm just popping out, and do it then, please. Don't do it at the age of 70. It sounds kind of painful.
That sounds traumatic.
And I still, to this day, I'm like, why'd you do it? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, maybe you just didn't like the way it looked. I'm not sure. Speaking of dew claws, Stacy in Birmingham writes that she just got a cat and it's tearing the hell out of her boyfriend's furniture and he wants to have it declawed. She does not want it to have a declaw because she feels like it's taking away what the cat's all about. Do you declaw, and what are the ramifications of declawing a cat? Is it inhumane? What's your thoughts?
I think that some people have a really hard time with this ethically. And my thoughts on it are, it's better to declaw a cat than to have it either given away or euthanized, or not loved. So when I have a client who says, I'd really like to declaw my cat, and here's why, most of the time we will say, well, have you tried soft paws, which are these like nail covers that you can put on their nails. You use glue. You put them on there. They do fall off eventually as the nail grows, so you have to do it periodically. But if the cat just won't let the owner put soft paws on, and it's really a matter of, look, it's either the cat stops tearing my house and my furniture up, or the cat goes.
Yeah.
then just in my professional opinion, then I have no problem declawing a cat. Now, we do everything we can to keep them from being painful and prevent infection and all those things. They spend two nights with us. We manage their pain. We do everything we can to be sure that they don't get infected, and they don't. You know, I think we've got it down to a good way to do it. But I mean, there are veterinarians out there that refuse to do it. They don't feel that it's something that we need to be doing. But you know, I a lot of times I put myself in the pet's shoes, and if someone were to tell me that I was either going to have to get kicked out of my house or have my nails amputated, I would have my nails amputated. So
you're not quite taking the roar out of the lion. I understand that, but I mean, it does seem like they're sharpening their claws a lot. I mean, we have a post outside of our house, and our cat just sharpens its claws on that post all the time, and it hurts because I know there's got to be splinters going up in that. It's just like it just freaks me out to see cats do that. But is that the only reason they do that? Is that part of why do cats tear stuff up? Why do they continue to sharpen their claws?
I think it's a. It's almost like a form of recreation, you know, it's something they enjoy doing, scratching. And that's the other thing is if you can redirect them on the scratching posts, then, you know, you don't have to worry about doing soft paws and you don't have to worry about declawing them.
Yeah.
Sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. So it's something that cats do as a form of pleasure.
Some of the funniest cat videos ever are when a guy's trying to catch a cat and it sticks his claws out on his shirt and he can't get it off. It's hilarious. I love that. Speaking of funny videos, Josh wants to know, are cats really afraid of snakes? He's gotten on these cat videos where you place a rubber snake behind a cat and they just absolutely freak out. And evidently it's pretty funny. It sounds traumatizing, but are all cats afraid of snakes?
I think that all cats are really cautious, and that's why, you know, they seem to have nine lives. But it's because they're cautious and they're quick. So there's probably some cats that are very inquisitive when it comes to snakes, and that's how they get bit. You know, I mean, most of the time you can, if you're an animal, especially a cat, you can avoid a snake bite. But cats get bitten because they're curious. Yeah. And then there are some cats that are terrified of their own shadow. So at the first sight of anything, they're going to run and jump. And get out of there. So I think it just depends on the cat. I wouldn't say all cats are for sure.
And that may be because they've been in a tussle with a snake before and they realize that it's not something they want to mess with. And so when they see something that looks like that, they freak out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes nature can be the best teacher.
No doubt. He's Dr. Rab Stewart of the Rossbridge Animal Hospital at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. Great Facebook page. Follow them and listen to our shows every single Monday, every Monday here on Tony Curry Radio's Dark Side of the Pooch Monday. And thanks to thousands of folks who join us every single week at noon and eight. The numbers continue to grow. And of course, they do that too because of the podcast we got going up at Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Just search Tony Curry Radio or Dark Side of the Pooch. I can promise you it's the only show with that name, and you can check it out and listen to it and binge watch it. One final question here, Mutt Mail. Gary wants to know, are dogs colorblind? And I'll go ahead and hop on that question as well. Are cats colorblind?
I don't think they're colorblind. I think that they have a different, their rods and their cones are not exactly like ours in their eye. But you can train a dog to know colors. So they are in fact not colorblind.
Okay, there you have it. Anything interesting and fun happening at Rossbridge Animal Hospital? Any good stories you want to share before we go?
Man, I have been gone for a week. I'm just getting back because I was on spring break with my kids. So I hope everything went great because I wasn't there to know about it.
There you go. We had some nasty weather here yesterday. And by the way, we're sitting here watching TV. It's just on a random channel. And we're watching a white cat battle a rattlesnake on TV. It's like we just asked the question and the snake won, by the way. Hey,
cat was not afraid.
No doubt.
It is now.
Enjoy your wonderful vacation. I can't wait to catch up with you next week. And thanks again for all you do.
Until next week, my friend.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.